Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'm going to try to explain the things that have happened and what makes them relevant to you and to me. Then in our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His covenant, revealing its five terms and conditions, as well as its five benefits. If you're an atheist, agnostic, or someone who just recognizes there's something not quite right with your religion, this will be the best part of today's program. Our phone number, if you'd like to call to question something that I say, criticize, or affirm something you hear on this program, is 877-300-7645. This morning, as we were listening to the introductory news, the first commentary was having both presidential candidates, current president and his rival on the Republican side, commenting on what should be done relative to the shooting joker in Colorado, with the president quick to say that, well, it's an opportunity to look at gun control. And, of course, politicians always couch those comments in things like, well, we would all agree that criminals and fugitives should be kept from having guns. Well, what is the definition of a criminal and a fugitive? I mean, this president has seen fit to kill Americans without due process by killing them, literally murdering them in cold blood based upon his own review of their words and him deciding that those that have never been charged with a crime should be killed. So we have a real problem here with saying, well, you can have a gun, but you can't have a gun. Reality is that the reason that the U.S. Constitution granted the right to bear arms, and it wasn't the right to bear, well, you can have that caliber of gun, but not this caliber of gun. You can have that size of a magazine, but not this size of a magazine. You can have a gun that looks like this, but not one that looks like that. The reason that the U.S. Constitution grants the people the right to bear arms is because they recognize that almost all governments grow and ultimately become tyrannies. And that because governments that preclude or limit the citizens' rights to bear arms are extremely difficult to control and overthrow. And so the moment that we continue this slippery slope that we're on, that is almost a death spiral, where we continue to restrict the ownership of guns in the public's hands, the more tyrannical, the more oppressive our government will be, and the less freedoms Americans will have. Now, our presidential contender, Mr. Romney, decided that he thought that, well, let's not say we need any more laws, but what we really want is the ability to spy. We want the ability to know and root out those who are a threat. Well, why would you even say that as it relates to this particular joker? He didn't have an agenda that is known. Crazy as a loon. Now, crazy as a loon, does that exonerate him from what he did? Of course not. Did he plan this in advance? Absolutely. Should he face the full penalty for what he's done? Absolutely. But there was no way to root out this threat. Yes, I know that there's a package that he sent his psychiatrist that wasn't open, and had it been opened in a timely fashion, should the university have opened its mail and professors have opened their mail in a timely fashion, could they have stopped this guy? Perhaps, but would that have had anything to do with the U.S. government increasing its investigation of its own citizens? No. What politicians really want is they would like to have the ability to spy on all citizens so that those who are willing to tell you that the U.S. government is a house of cards, that it is run by immoral people, aligned with immoral parties, propagating immoral principles, all of which are hostile to the best interests of the American people, they don't want those kinds of individuals to have a voice. And any power that we give them and that they usurp based upon a tragedy like this will serve them and work against the people. Both of these men were misguided in their comments today. And that is the reason why we need to be very careful if we are political. I have chosen not to be political because God, the first covenant, the first codicil of his covenant, is to walk away from our country, to cease being political and patriotic. There was a second item in the news, talked about in Syria that it's on the brink of civil war. Nearly 20,000 people have been killed. It has changed considerably from peaceful protests on one side to now being a civil war. This is because the countries surrounding Syria are using this war as a proxy for a bigger war that they are actually fighting, one that the United States seems oblivious to. It is a war that in Syria that the United States, in essence, started. The reason the United States is guilty of starting this war is that the principal power of Shiite Islam has been, for a very long time, Iran. Most of the power in Shiite Islam resides with Iran. And so when Iran was buffered with this enemy being Iraq and was fighting for its survival with Iraq, Iran was not a power player in the Islamic world. Their power was diminished by the constant threat of Iraq. And on the south, because of the enormous monies associated with the oil reserves in Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia's influence in Egypt and with Hamas and other terrorist organizations, particularly Al-Qaeda, worldwide, Saudi Arabia had more influence than did Iran. And even regionally, Iran's influence was constrained. Then the United States did something that was suicidal, unbelievably stupid, among the most idiotic things America has ever done. George Bush decided to invade Iraq, and he did so on a series of lies, that they had bought yellowcake uranium and that the smoking gun was going to be a nuclear bomb, when he knew at the time it had been proven that that report was false. He said it in a State of the Union address anyway. Then he claimed that Al-Qaeda was involved in Iraq and that we needed to root Al-Qaeda out of Iraq. Al-Qaeda had absolutely no involvement with Iraq whatsoever. Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein were arch enemies. And so based on a lie, we invaded Iraq. When we did that, we replaced a secular Sunni government. When I say secular Sunni, you'd think, well, that's a conflict in terms. Saddam Hussein was a secularist, even though his tribe was principally Sunni. We replaced that government with a government totally controlled by the Ayatollah al-Sistani, who is an Iranian Shiite Muslim living in Iraq. We gave the country to the mullahs in Iran. And as a result, we eliminated Iran's only enemy. We gave them their enemy on a silver platter. And as a result, rather than Syria having more bonds, more ties to the Ba'ath Party government in Iraq, all of a sudden Syria was a client state of Iran, as was now Iraq. And that gave Iran a clear passage into Lebanon, which it completed its destabilization, now completely controls Lebanon, turning it into a hellhole. The purpose of that was to create the ability for Iran to be the dominant force of what will be World War III. And well, I know about World War III because I've studied Yahweh's testimony. Satan, who is Allah, knows about World War III as well because it's his war. And the Iranians, if you listen to their speeches, Ahmadinejad's and the Grand Ayatollah, If you listened to their speeches, you'll recognize that their entire purpose is to position Iran as being the capital of the Mahdi, who will be the Islamic warlord who will lead a united coalition of Muslims against Israel, finally destroying Israel and killing every Jew. That is their goal. And that war will indeed happen. In fact, if you study Yah's testimony, it is fairly easy to determine that that war is going to happen in 2027, is when that war will be fought. Now, why did I say that the United States caused this war? Because of what we did in Iraq, giving Iraq to Iran, we now created a massive shift of power in the Islamic world. From the Sunnis, who are the majority of Muslims, to the Shias, who are the minority of Muslims. And as a result of this shift, now, the Saudi Arabians, the Kuwaitis, the Qataris, and to some extent the Turks as well, have decided that they can thwart the rise of Iran and Shia Islam, which they despise, by arming the Sunnis who are uprising against Assad's government. Assad is an Alawite, which is a derivative of Shia Islam. And so what was a peaceful protest against a totalitarian government that oppressed the majority of the people has now become a civil war. And it's become a civil war because the Sunni Muslims who have been diminished in influence are now using this as a forum to fight against the rising influence of Iran, which the United States made possible because of its invasion in Iraq. It is the consequence of us invading Iraq that I don't think 1 in 100,000 Americans understand. It was suicidal. It was awesomely counterproductive, what we did in Iraq. And it was eminently visible in advance that we were going to create this kind of a mess. Well, we've reached the end of our first segment. When we return, I'm going to turn to Black September and what happened 40 years ago at the Olympics, and then we're going to cover a story about continuing to fight the Afghanistan war. This is Shattering Myths.
Jim Newcomb.
Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. I don't do this because to make you mad. I mean, there's a lot of people who are patriotic, a lot of people who have been engaged in the military, who've been part of the military, who are supportive of the military. There's lots of people, the majority of listening to this program, are probably still have some allegiance to either the Republican or Democratic Party, or are significantly involved trying to promote the electability of a third-party candidate. And, of course, the vast majority of Americans are religious. The reason that I've devoted to this program, to shattering the myths of these things, is twofold. First, if you want to have a relationship with God, the only way to do it is to be willing to walk away from your country, from religion, from politics, from all human schemes. If you're unwilling to disassociate from those schemes, then you cannot have a relationship with God. It's just, those are His rules. He does not want religion and politics, military or economic schemes to be corrupting His home. So if you want to participate in His family, you have to walk away from them. And you can't be saved until you first engage in this covenant relationship. So that's the primary reason that I've devoted this program to shattering these myths, because I don't want you to be precluded from knowing Yahweh. The second reason is, it's important that we come to realize that our government isn't in our best interest, that our government is doing enormous things around the world and internally with its own people that are counterproductive, and that our military is not, as we are told, protecting our freedoms, that we're not doing the right things economically in this nation, nor are virtually any nations around the world. You know, part of the item that came through in the first segment of news was that some European economist says, oh, we have everything under control here in Europe, and all we have to show is that we have the will to get ourselves out of this debt crisis. Well, the reality is there is no way out of the debt crisis. Once you have begun down this path of economic pedophilia, where you indulge the current group of citizens by passing the bill on to your children, once you go down that path, there is no reverse. There is no way out of that. Ultimately, you create such a burden that the country can no longer stand, and it collapses in chaos. And that is where we're headed. And it's important that people understand that everything from their religion to their politics to patriotism is misguided loyalty, that these things will not deliver the hope that people are looking for. And that is the reason why we're devoting this program to exposing them, so that you, if you're open-minded and are willing to examine the evidence, are at least motivated, triggered to study the truth for yourself, to be observant, and to disassociate from them. And if you do, what I can promise you is that there is something on the other side that is vastly superior, which is a relationship with the creator of the universe. Speaking to the malfeasance of religion and politics, 40 years ago, 11 Israelis were murdered at the Olympic Games in Munich, and yet the International Olympic Committee is not even allowing a minute of silence to honor those who were murdered by Black September. It is important that we know who Black September was, why these Jews were murdered, and that if we just forget about it and pretend it didn't happen, as the U.S. Olympic Committee is wont to do, then all we do is destine ourselves to become future victims. Black September was a part of the PLO. The PLO was a auspice of Fatah. Fatah is the political organization that the so-called Palestinians now are part of, that are in the West Bank. The Fatah controls the so-called West Bank, only called the West Bank because it used to be part of Jordan. And Hamas controls Gaza. So-called Palestinians are divided between those two political and religious entities. So the very group that we consider to be moderates, that the United States is attempting to require Israel to give huge swaths of its territory to, for the promise of peace, is the very organization, the PLO, Fatah, and Black September, that thought it was a service to their God, Allah, to kill those 11 Israelis some 40 years ago. If we do not come to understand why Muslims are anti-Semitic, why they are lashing out, and why they think that killing Jews is a service to their God, then our children, we and our children, will be victims of them. We don't need a moment of silence regarding this. What we need regarding this is a moment where people observe the truth. This is Shattering Myths. I am Yada. We welcome Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. On this program, we're going to continue to expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Should you wish to call and question something that I have said, the number is 877-300-7645. Before we turn to the story on Afghanistan, and that we're coming out of the break, we were talking about what happened in Munich, where 11 Israelis were murdered by Muslims some 40 years ago. It is important for you to realize that if you have been beguiled into believing that Islam is one of three Abrahamic religions, and that we all worship the same God, and that those who kill in the name of Islam have corrupted their religion, the opposite of everything I have just shared with you is actually true. There is no such thing as an Abrahamic religion. Abraham did not have a religion. He was not religious. Islam is the antithesis of Judeo-Christianity. It is not akin to them. Allah is the opposite of Yahweh. Yahweh is the God who authored the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. They are opposites. Allah is modeled after Satan. Islam is a terrorist manifesto. It is a declaration of war against all humankind. The beginning of the Islamic era coincides when Muhammad was thrust out of Mecca in shame, based upon the satanic verses where he claimed that that all of Allah's messengers spoke on behalf of Satan. And following this, he decided to find some allies who could help him get back at those Meccans for booting him out of town. And so he formed what was called the Pledge of Aqaba, where he got some pagans in Yathrib, today's Medina, to pledge to wage war against all humankind on behalf of him and his wannabe God. That was the beginning of the Islamic era. Over the next 10 years, Muhammad would lead and inspire 75 terrorist raids. 75 terrorist raids in 10 years. Islam is nothing more than a terrorist coveting what belonged to others and using force to achieve it. Mankind cannot coexist with Islam. The more Islam spreads, the more Islam's influence infiltrates our world, the more hellish our world becomes. What happened in Munich, what happened on 9/11, is a direct derivative of the religion of Islam. This brings us to a story that was published earlier in the week. Dateline is Washington, D.C. Condemning the war in Afghanistan as a waste of lives and of money. U.S. lawmakers on Wednesdays debated whether to approve $608 billion in defense spending next year. Pretty amazing that U.S. lawmakers would finally come to the point of saying something that I have been saying publicly now for 11 years. Although I have gone much further than this. It's not that the war in Afghanistan was just a colossal waste of lives and money. It was actually counterproductive. We made a bad situation worse, and as a result of making a bad situation worse, we squandered tens of thousands of lives and hundreds of billions of dollars, making a bad situation worse. The article continues, a string of war-weary lawmakers from both parties and the House of Representatives expressed anger with the corruption in the government of Afghanistan's President Hamid Karzai, skepticism about any lasting progress towards resolving the conflict, and exhaustion over the unending cost in lives and treasure. Before we invaded Afghanistan, I told all who would listen, both in writing and on national radio programs, that Afghanistan would be like Vietnam, that it would be a war without any opportunity to win. It would be a lose-lose scenario, that we would go in, we would prop up a government that would be corrupt, that we would not be able to tell the good guys from the bad guys, and that, in fact, there may not even be any good guys. That we would spend money, we would squander lives based upon lies, and in the end, we would find ourselves in a situation where the public finally becomes exhausted by the whole thing. And then you have to realize that patriotic Americans saying we just can't leave because we need to honor those who lost their lives there. And that was the story of Vietnam. We continued to stay to honor the lives of those who had been sacrificed previously, and now we had 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 times more lives to honor, continuing to make a bad situation worse. The reality is that Afghanistan had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. Al-Qaeda wasn't even the inspiration for 9/11, as you have been told. Now, I know that this network, the Genesis Communication Network, is famous for its very articulate and knowledgeable conspiracy theorists. And therefore, what I'm going to tell you will be perhaps in conflict with what you would hear in other programs. But while it may be easy for you to appreciate the fact that Al-Qaeda was not the inspiration for 9/11, it may be difficult for you to recognize that we know for certain who was the inspiration of 9/11, and it was Ramzi Youssef. Ramzi Youssef was a member of Abu Sayyaf. He was a Philippine Muslim. During the time that the Pope was scheduled to visit the Philippines, Ramzi Youssef decided that he would conceive a plan to do three things. One is he wanted to kill the Pope. He failed in that, of course. He wanted to come up with a plan that would bring down airplanes mid-flight. He wanted to do it in flights between Europe and the United States so that he would kill the maximum number of Christians and particularly Americans. And that was the first use of chemicals on airplanes. So when you now are limited in the chemicals that you can carry on airplanes, you may think that that's because of a plot that was conceived in Europe. No, the plot was conceived by Ramzi Youssef in the Philippines. And the third thing that he wrote, and he had a detailed explanation of his idea to hijack airplanes and fly them into buildings, specifically buildings like the World Trade Center, like the Pentagon, like the U.S. Capitol. He conceived the plan. He put it in that plan in writing. He sent the plan off to jihadists. The first jihadist that picked up on his plan was the Imam of the Al-Qaeda Mosque in Hamburg, Germany. And that is the inspiration for 9/11. Ramzi Youssef, we didn't have to go to Afghanistan to find. He was a guest of the U.S. government because Ramzi Youssef was charged, arrested, and convicted in the first bombing of the World Trade Center. When he was being hauled away and he lost his day in court, he was being taken to prison in a helicopter. One of the FBI agents in the airplane lifted blindfold and said, "See, the World Trade Center still stands. You failed." And he says, "Not for long." And so we went off in Afghanistan after a fake foe, because this president wanted to be a wartime president. George Bush wanted to be a wartime president, because wartime presidents are typically more popular and they're immune to criticism. So he invaded Afghanistan, which had zero chance of prevailing at the time, based upon a lie. And the American people have continued to have been fed this lie, believing now that we are in a war against Al-Qaeda, when Al-Qaeda, for all practical purposes, does not even exist anymore. And it has not for a very long time. Well, lawmakers are finally tired of all of this. This is a quote: "I cannot continue to support legislation that sends billions and billions and billions of dollars to Afghanistan," said Republican Representative Walter Jones, whose district in North Carolina includes Camp Lejeune, the largest Marine Corps base on the U.S. East Coast. Quote, "I have signed over 10,474 letters to families who have lost loved ones since we lied to go into Iraq," Jones said. Can you imagine that an elected official actually has, and this is a Republican, who can say, "I have signed letters, 10,474 letters to families who lost loved ones based on a lie." Yes, the invasion of Iraq was a complete lie. George W. Bush lied to the American people to justify invading Iraq. He said that they had purchased yellowcake iridium from Nigeria when he knew that it was false. He said they had weapons of mass destruction, which would, even if they had them, they would not have been used against America. And yet, we found none. And as a result of our invasion, 900,000 people have died, and we have squandered $4 trillion. And this Republican representative has signed 10,474 letters to the families of loved ones whose sons and daughters were killed in Iraq based upon George Bush's lie. Quote, from Jones again, it is time that Congress listen to the 72% of American people who say, bring our troops home now, not later. We should never have invaded, and once we invaded, the time to withdraw was that same day. We've let almost 11 years go by, unwilling to withdraw. The reason is the same that Johnson incurred in a very similar war with a political enemy as opposed to a religious enemy, but in Vietnam. He's on record. It's the recording of this conversation can be listened to in the archives at the University of Virginia. He's talking to McNamara, who is the Secretary of Defense, and McNamara is telling him the Pumpkin incident, which is the justification for going into Vietnam for starting that war, was not true, that it did not happen. And Johnson is saying, yes, I understand that the justification for declaring war did not happen, but what are we going to do now? America will never forgive a president that withdraws in defeat, so I cannot get out of this war. At the time, we had lost 5,000 Americans because he was unwilling to accept responsibility for the lie. Another 50,000 Americans would die for nothing, just like these 10,474. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths. If you wish to call us, our number is 877-300-7645. At the end of the last segment, we were discussing a report out of the U.S. Congress where congressmen were finally able to articulate on the floor of the Congress that America invaded Iraq based on lies, that the Afghanistan war was a failed endeavor, and that it was finally time to listen to the majority of people who, some 10 years ago, were in favor of rallying around the president and invading Afghanistan. Well, now 72% of Americans have become weary of this war and say, bring our troops home. Representative Dana Rohrabacher, a California Republican who fought with the Mujahideen against the Soviet occupation forces during a visit to Afghanistan in the 1980s, said the U.S.-led war was like a Twilight Zone episode, and the longer we stay there, the more enemies we are going to make. Osama bin Laden is dead. The Taliban were cleared from Afghanistan years ago. He said, it's time for us to declare victory and bring our troops home. Boy, there's a lot of meat in that statement. First of all, for those who do not know, if he fought with the Mujahideen against the Soviet occupation forces in Afghanistan, then he was part of the problem. He was one of those who created Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. You see, the Taliban existed for a specific reason. The Pakistanis wanted to control a portion, the western portion of Afghanistan, so that they could have international companies put a pipeline down there that would then come through Pakistan, where they could charge a tariff and therefore benefit from the landlocked oil and gas reserves of the Caspian Sea. And so the easiest way to get them was to go through western Afghanistan. The Taliban was created so that Pakistan could control that western portion of Afghanistan. That's the reason for it. So when the United States wanted to give the Soviets a taste of what they gave us in Vietnam, aiding and abetting the Viet Cong, the United States clandestinely sent $5 billion worth of weapons and money to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban via Pakistan's government and launched a battle against the Soviet occupiers. Well, the problem with that, of course, is that a couple of million Afghanis died in that civil war, and that as a result, the end was that we left and gave the country to a worse foe than the Soviets. The Taliban were worse than were the Soviet occupiers, and so we spilled blood and coin, turning Afghanistan over to the Taliban, who we had equipped. And then now, when the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are blamed for 9/11, we go in and invade Afghanistan to fight this very same foe that we created and that we armed in the first place. It is like a Twilight Zone episode, Congressman. Now, it is also true that just as was the case in Vietnam, the longer we stay, the more enemies we make. Rather than making friends, we are making enemies. In Vietnam, every time a B-52 flew over and dropped bombs, particularly napalm, all the Viet Cong, the communists had to do is point to the skies and say, "Who is your enemy?" In the case of Afghanistan, look at the drones. Here come the drones. Who is your enemy? And the longer we stay, the more enemies we make. Not only is Osama bin Laden dead, he became meaningless. He was always meaningless. He was, for a while, our ally. His very story we will tell in a future program when I have more time as to how he came to hate the United States. But even in this, the Bush's fingerprints are all over it. Representative Peter Welch, a Vermont Democrat at this time on the other side of the aisle, said that the nation-building policy adopted by the United States in Afghanistan would be seen through the lens of history as about as effective as trench warfare was in World War I. Folks, we need to wake up. We need to recognize that Afghanistan was a colossal mistake. We need to leave, and then we need to be honest about why we went in and why we failed so that we do not repeat this mistake. This is Shattering Myths,
877-357. Keep their livestock lean and healthy with a mineral-rich diet. Before market, they cut off minerals, leaving them to crave high-calorie grains. If weight control is this easy, why prescribe surgery for humans? Avoid 900 different...